This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It is episode 162, I think. I'm going to turn on the air conditioning because it's like 85 degrees here, which is getting nice and toasty warm. It's been fun because the main client where I work, they've been sort of having air conditioning adventures. And I have an office now, since they've moved me, that faces, south. It faces south. And I sit right in front of this big window. And so it's been a little bit interesting because, I mean, I get some afternoon sun, which is fine with me, but some of the other guys who are in the next office over, when their office starts heating up, they're like, it's hot. So I see them down there poking at the thermostat, and none of us programmers actually know how this programmable thermostat works. And so we're just acting like the normal users. They are just punching buttons until something good happens. So we were kind of laughing about that because we've seen that behavior when it comes to programs that we write, and usually the result is not good. So anyways, but then as it turns out, we found out that the unit wasn't functioning correctly. So there was a reason why punching all those buttons didn't make any difference. Yesterday, I think it was, apparently the unit got fixed, because it was cold in my office. So I was going over to the offices in the other part of the building just to get warmed up at some points. But anyway, so it's fun. Everything seems to be going well there. We're loading data and looking at this dynamic CRM, and we actually loaded enough data that we hit the top of our data limit, so we had to expand our data limit a little bit. And it's good. It's fun. You know, God is good. Everything's great. Had one of my buddies told me a great story the other day. He came in and we were chatting, and he had said that his wife had misplaced her wedding ring. And he kind of gave her one of my standard lines for when I'm missing something, that it's just traveling and it will come back eventually. Her ring had been traveling for like 2 months. And he said the night before he had gotten a ping that they should really just stop, pray about it, ask God to help them, and then just see if God would help them know where to look. And so they did pray about it together. He went ahead and came in on to work, and he said it wasn't, you know, it was like halfway through the day, he had gotten a text message from his wife saying, "I found my ring." So there was great rejoicing in the land, which is cool. That's cool. Let's see, had a wonderful breakfast this morning with a new friend. We're getting together once a month, about on the first Thursday of the month. So I had another breakfast with him this morning and had a really good time. It's interesting because he's part of a consulting business as well, and he actually is in charge of several guys. And so he has that whole dynamic working in his life. And he's, I think, one of the co-owners of the business. And so he obviously is going to bring his own perspectives when it comes to hierarchy and functioning within a hierarchy. And so that gives us a chance to kind of talk about that more and gives me a chance to kind of express some of the things I'm thinking and then get his input. And so it's been really good. It's been fun. I look forward to our meetings together. I have had several meetings with my buddies this week, which is good. I think I've about had chats with everyone, all except one, maybe. this week. So, no, I have had chats with everybody this week. Well, not my kids. So, everybody except my kids this week. So, it's been a good week. It's been a full week. I love it when I actually get together with my friends and we talk. And had a really interesting conversation on Friday night. We went out with some other friends on Friday nights. We usually go out with our kids, but we had some coupons we needed to use, and so we got together with some friends, and they have just recently started a new little church. And he had read the book Pagan Christianity and had recommended it to me. And so we got a chance to talk about that a little bit and talk about some of the issues that he's facing with starting this new church up. And so it's very interesting. It's very, very interesting to see how all that will develop out. The writing is going well. Most of the darkness scene and the knowing scene and the void, which is all during Jesus's crucifixion, most of that is on paper. Some of it needs to be tweaked now that I kind of know where I'm going. So I am going to have to, it's rough, but it's on paper, and I'm thinking that tomorrow, if all goes well, I should be finishing up the death scene. And then from there, there'll be more stuff to work out, but I'm kind of coasting downhill from there because I just have the aftershocks that occur between the death scene and then just before the resurrection. And I kind of know what all those are, and I'll be through all the emotional sections of the book, and so that'll be a little easier to write. And so I think I'm getting close. I'm starting to get excited now about finishing the rough draft up and then turning around and actually polishing it out. And so I'm sure it's going to take me 3 weeks or so, 4 weeks or so to polish it up and get it ready for beta. But it's almost on the page. So that's fun. That's fun. I'm really excited about that. And I'm excited about doing the next one. Because I don't know how emotional the next one will be, but I think I have some really good things to say in the next one. So it's good. It's good. I actually ran out of things to do on Tuesday just because there's some things we're waiting on for two of the projects that I'm working on, and then the third one was loading this CRM, and we were trying to load sales data, and it was just taking a long time, and we couldn't do anything else until that got done. And so I went home early on Tuesday and got a chance to work on it, and I made some really good progress on Tuesday, so happy about that. Anyways, tangentially related to the book, writing the book, I was reading an article several weeks ago called How to Be Creative. And it was reviewing a book about creativity and had some interesting things to say about creativity. And as I was reading through this article, I was thinking, oh yeah, I recognize that. Oh yeah, I recognize that. Oh yeah, that's right. What's interesting about these kind of articles, and I had started a book several months ago on creativity, and I think I may have mentioned it in a podcast. I'm not sure I actually did a podcast on it. I would have to go back and look, which I didn't. But what's interesting is that most of these things are written from the perspective of humanism and atheistic evolution, where there's not really a whole lot of attention paid to the fact that there may be a wellspring of creativeness in us that comes from deity, but it's just, well, you know, the creativity, there's different kinds of creativity, and it comes from our adaptive unconscious, and we're never going to know how it works. But at least we aren't to the place where people are saying, see, those are the five neurons that make creativity. I mean, the people who are writing about creativity, whether right or wrong, are pretty well convinced that we're never going to be able to figure it out totally, how creativity works. Which I'd say that's probably true. But I have a different reason for that, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But of the things that were in this article that were really pretty interesting is the fact that they were saying that there has been this myth of that there is a creative type person. And that this creative type person, like Milton Glaser or Yo-Yo Ma, that they just have this magical gift of creativity and they're unlike the rest of us. And they're saying that, you know, no, they don't think that that's really correct, that we are all creative, which I have maintained for years, because I believe the wellspring of creativity is from the divine, and the divine is within all of us. But that, you know, of course, because this was written from a humanistic evolution standpoint, their take on it is that creativity is not a trait that we inherit in our genes. It's not a blessing bestowed on us by angels. It's a skill, and anyone can learn to be creative and get better at it. And I would agree that that's absolutely true. What's interesting is that there seems to be different ways of approaching creativity, and there's different types of creativity, and what works best in one situation is not necessarily what works best in another situation. And I found that to be true as well in my life. That really we kind of use creativity as this catch-all term for a lot of things that we do cognitively, when in fact each of these different things kind of needs a different way to get it activated. And so as we're pursuing, then the question is, well, how do we know which way we're supposed to go about this? And that's where, you know, the article is pretty interesting, because it talks about the fact that, first of all, that we tend to assume, wow, big falcon going by. I think that was a falcon. He was low, though, and he's still low. He almost ran into my windshield. That would have been very exciting. They were talking in this article about the fact that people tend to assume that the experts are the creative geniuses in their own field. But sometimes the people who come up with the solutions are not necessarily the experts in the field, because they need to come at the problem sideways, and if they're the experts in the field, they're always sort of hitting it head on. And they gave an example of an engineer named Arthur Fry at 3M years ago, that in 1974 he attended a presentation by another engineer called Sheldon Silver. And Mr. Silver was working on adhesives, and he had come up with this adhesive that didn't stick very well. Okay, well, you know, if you're an engineer in charge of coming up with adhesives, you know, having an adhesive that didn't stick very well, that doesn't seem like there's much use for that. And people were kind of stymied about, well, what in the world would we do with this? Is there anything we can use this for? And Arthur Fry at first thought, well, you know, adhesives are supposed to stick. But then he was actually at church, I think singing in the choir, and he needed to put some bookmarks in where he needed to turn to in his books. And the problem was, is he'd put the bookmarks in, but then he'd open the book and the bookmarks would fall out. And then he'd have to scramble to try to find his place in the book. And during the sermon, it struck him that, you know, if we just had some of this adhesive on the back of these pieces of paper, I could stick them to the book and they would hold for long enough for them to do their purpose, and then I could like take them off and stick them someplace else. And of course, that was the start of Post-it notes, which have been an extraordinary success. And this is one type of creativity that you get these flashes of insight. And I certainly have had my share of those flashes of insight. And it often does not come when you're expecting them to come. I'll get flashes of insight in the shower, when I'm working on something and I'm, you know, kind of in a knot and I can't figure out where it, sometimes I just lay it down and walk away. I quit obsessing over it. Because I know as I'm going to sleep at night, or as I'm waking up the next day, or as I'm driving into my major client and thinking about it, something is going to trigger. And I'll go, oh, okay. And sometimes you get the whole answer, bam, just like that. And so for some type of creativity, it's good to have a distraction. And they were saying that they've tested some of these problems that need a flash of insight. Like, for instance, they give you three words: pine, crab, and sauce. And you have to come up with the word that ties all those together. The three words are pine, crab, and sauce. You can pause if you want to figure it out yourself. But they find that to get to the answers on those types of problems where you just need a flash of insight, they said sometimes people watching Robin Williams doing stand-up comedy will do it. Or drunk students solve like 30% more of these word problems than their sober peers. So, and they said, well, are we supposed to, like, drink booze to get more creative? And they're saying, no, what they think is that people who are drinking are more relaxed. And so the answer can more easily kind of float to the top. They're a little bit distracted, they're relaxed, and the brain just goes, tink, gives you the answer. Which the answer, by the way, is apple. Pine apple, crab apple, apple sauce. So that's why when I'm sometimes faced with a difficult problem, I'll just go, okay, that's it, and I'll just back away from it. Sometimes I'll just go out and get myself a little snack. Sometimes I'll just drop it all together and come back to it the next day. There's been times in the past I've used a technique where when I was really struggling with a problem and I couldn't figure out the answer to it with writing, I just go lay down, take a quick nap. And then when I'd get up, it would be like, ping, this is what to do. Oh, hey, I got it. I'm getting my mail. One moment. So that's one type of creative impulse. And sometimes you just flat need to get away from it so that you get the chance to kind of breathe a little bit and do something else. Give your brain a chance to kind of ruminate around on it. And in my vernacular, get quiet enough that you can hear the little whispers down in your spirit going, this is what you want to do. But they do talk about the fact that there is another type of creativity, and I have definitely experienced this as well. In the article, they talk about the fact that there is another type of creativity, that there's really nothing fun about it, that it basically consists of sweat and failure. They said Nietzsche referred to this as the rejecting process, noting that while creators like to brag about their big epiphanies, their everyday reality was much less romantic. Nietzsche said, all great artists and great thinkers are great workers. And I agree with that. Writing is hard. Any kind of creativity is hard, unless you're somebody like Mozart. But I mean, they gave an example of Milton Glaser, I think is his name, who created what is probably one of the most recognizable logos in existence. And that's the I Love New York logo with the I and the heart and the NY. And what's interesting about that is he was charged with coming up with some logo for an I Love New York campaign. And he had actually come up with this logo with cursive script and everybody loved it. And they said, oh, yeah, let's go with that. It's great. But he kept working on it because he just felt like there was something that he could do better. There was something more that could be done. And he just kept working on it and kept working on it. And then suddenly he got this flash and, you know, he scribbled it down on a piece of paper for this very, very simple thing. And there's lots of quotes from other people about creativity being difficult and creativity being work and all those kind of things. But I'm already home, so we're going to skip over all that stuff. So the question is, how do we know when we need to buckle down and just work through something? And last week, I had one of those experiences where I felt like I was stuck. And so I just backed up in the book and I just said, okay, what do we know for sure? And I started there and then just started running down every pathway I could think of. And one of my favorite stories about composers, it was the composer that wrote the music to Bally High. I should have looked that up, but I didn't. But they said his process of composition and creativity was just to try out all the combinations. And he would write some of the most interesting tunes, like Bally High will stand out, do 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 do. And he would sit there and go, da di di, da di di, da di di, da di di, no, da di di. And he would just try out all the combinations till he found the stuff he liked. Hard work. So how do you know when you just need to buckle down or when you need to just go with, you know, try to get a flash of insight by stepping away? How do you know when you're at the right place and you've found it and it's time to stop? And one of the interesting things they said is that we have, that the human mind has a natural ability to assess the kind of creativity that we need. And they said that researchers call these intuitions feelings of knowing. And I can attest to that, that as you're exercising this creativity, I get these feelings that there's something over there I haven't found yet. Or when I hit it, no, that'll work. That's good. That's good. Okay, we're fine there. And one of the frustrating things about it is that sometimes it really feels like there's something over there, but sometimes I can't find it. When I was working on That Faded Shore, which is the time travel novel, there was a spot on the end where I was pretty sure it could have some emotional components. And I worked on that page for 3 weeks and couldn't ever find the combination. Now, who knows? Maybe at some point in the future, I'll come back to it and I'll find it. But for that moment, for that book, I never did nail it down, but I was able to look at it and say, you know what, the rest of it, it's sufficient. Let's just go ahead and go with this. So creativity is really one of these interesting things. There is one other, I need to quit because we're done. I'm going over here. There was one other really cool story about this, and I'll just read it verbatim because it's a great, great story. The composer Bruce Adolphe first met Yo-Yo Ma at the Juilliard School in New York City in 1970. Mr. Ma was just 15 years old at the time, though he'd already played for JFK at the White House. Wow. Mr. Adolphe had just written his first cello piece. "Unfortunately, I had no idea what I was doing," Mr. Adolphe remembers. "I'd never written for the instrument before." Mr. Adolphe had shown a draft of his composition to a Juilliard instructor who informed him that the piece featured a chord that was impossible to play. Before Mr. Adolphe could correct the music, however, Mr. Ma decided to rehearse the composition in his dorm room. "Yo-Yo Ma played through my piece, sight-reading the whole thing," Mr. Adolphe says, "and when that impossible chord came, he somehow found a way to play it." Mr. Adolphe told Mr. Ma what the professor had said and asked how he had managed to play the impossible chord. They went through the piece again, and when Mr. Ma came to the impossible chord, Mr. Adolphe yelled, "Stop!" And they looked at Yo-Yo Ma's left hand. It was contorted on the fingerboard in a position that was nearly impossible to hold. "You're right," said Mr. Ma. "You really can't play that." Yet somehow he did. And that's that cool creativity thing going. And what was fun about this article is that even after they're explaining, oh, there's two different types of creativity and blah, 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 and new studies reveal all this stuff and everybody's creative and yada, 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 they ended with this quote, which I thought, well, a couple of quotes that I thought were really good and really true. "And yet we must also be honest, the creative process will never be easy. No matter how much we learn about it, our inventions will always be shadowed by uncertainty, by the serendipity of brain cells making a new connection." And I think I'd mentioned a couple of weeks ago that I was talking to a buddy about creativity, and this buddy happens to write poetry too, how that the creative process is this delightful terror. And he said, "Yes, it is." He ran over to his board and wrote down that phrase, delightful terror. Because sometimes you just never know if it's coming or not. And the final statement of the article I thought was really good too. "Every creative story is different, and yet every creative story is the same thing. There was nothing, and now there is something." They said, "It's almost magic." And I would agree that it does feel like magic, but what I always track it back to is the creation story. Where what I'm doing in creativity is in some small way mimicking what God did with creation when there was nothing and then he called something into being. In the same way, when I'm writing my books, there was nothing and now there is something. And that's very, very cool. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.